Good evening. This is Mitch Miller at Sardi's East, where the good people surrounding me at this little party include a one-woman show, a one-man phone conversation, a fine actress, and a man who could throw a great deal of first-class illumination on the entire gathering. Art Hannis, would you explain, please?
Gladly, Mitch. Friends, you're listening to The Mitch Miller Show. Joining Mitch this evening are these bright personalities. The lively motion picture actress who's about to open in New York in her one-woman show, Elsa Lanchester. The brilliant comedian of the nightclubs, whose records have outsold all others in the comedy field, Shelley Berman. The lovely young stage and screen actress whose latest film is Francis of Assisi, Dolores Hart. And the theater's lighting genius, who is recognized as having made theater lighting an art, his latest show is Camelot, Abe Fader. Now, here are Elsa Lanchester, Shelley Berman, Dolores Hart, Abe Fader, and radio's most listened-to host of the famous and the fascinating, the Beard himself, Mitch Miller.
Thank you very much, Art Hannis. Elsa Lanchester, Shelley Berman, and Dolores Hart, I assume you all know the work of Abe Fader here, who's lighted 300 plays and almost everything else worth lighting in New York, from the United Nations to the Penguin Pool at the Zoo, from Idlewild Airport to the altar at St. Patrick's Cathedral. But I don't think he's lighted any of you, because I don't think he lights movies or television or nightclubs. Abe, you didn't light the Empire Room of the Waldorf Astoria where Shelley Berman is now playing, did you?
Nope.
Simple. While we're on this subject, how much illumination do you think a diner ought to get in a restaurant, Abe? Barely enough for his fork to find the food?
Depends how good the food is.
No other theories about lighting in a restaurant?
Yes, I do have some. I think the most important single thing in a restaurant is the girl who's usually the guest, whether her husband, her boyfriend, or just an acquaintance. If she doesn't look well, the restaurant may as well close. And in my experience, and I've done a few across country, I've always been called in as a doctor, never because they were interested in the first place of just worrying about that phase. They're always worried about money. But invariably, the money becomes secondary when the women don't come. They don't come because they look bad. And 60% of the restaurants in this country are in that category. If they wonder why they're not doing business, stop worrying about how women look when they get there.
Good answer. Shelley Berman, when you're performing in a club, do you prefer to see the faces you're playing to, or would you rather act into the dark as in a theater?
Well, in a nightclub, you don't see many of the faces you're playing to. You see outlines. You see the first few tables, and you can see those first few tables, but you can't see the rest of the people. In a theater, you can see the first row if you're addressing yourself to the audience, so it's about the same.
Mm-hmm. Any complaints about nightclub lighting you'd like to consult Abe Fader on?
Well, I think most nightclub lighting is inefficient. I think most nightclub owners don't regard lighting as very important, just as they neglect sound in many cases.
I was just going to say, they don't regard lighting as important, they don't regard sound as important.
That's
what
true.
Is important?
That's true. They feel that the performer can handle it without those essentials. In the Waldorf, they have pretty good lighting set up. However, I think even that is a slightly deficient setup. I think it could be improved upon. They have good lighting men, good people working there.
No.
Most nightclubs don't really spend enough money on their lighting equipment.
And I'm always amazed at the sound. A top singer or comedian will come into a nightclub, and it sounds like they're talking through a hunk of wool or something.
Right. Sometimes the sound is terrible. And if you complain about the sound, they say, "I hear you." But that, you know, that isn't enough, you know. The point is, how do you hear me? Do you hear the highs and lows? Do you hear the emphasis that I want to get when I lean into a mic? Do you get the right kind of sound? I see you, but do I see you properly? That's the important thing.
Elsa Lanchester, you're opening in a theater here next week, but you've played clubs too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer not seeing your audience? Theater lighting?
I'd rather see the audience, actually, yeah. I mean, I'd like to see at least faces in the front row, because they mirror you. You know, you look at them, you smile, they smile, then you warm and they warm. It's like a good exchange. But of course, in a restaurant, I agree that the lighting is very bad for women, and Abe probably can answer me. I don't know. It's the red, I think, in lighting, don't you think so? It takes the women's lips out, so that men, they go out with their girlfriends, and they suddenly find a woman with no mouth, which, of course, isn't very helpful, is it?
Well, it's a very strange thing about the so-called lighting experts in the majority of this country, it'd be shocking to tell you that it's not the architects or the engineers or the few people who are specialists in lighting like myself, but the so-called lighting expert in this country is a contractor, an electrical contractor, who puts in so-called fixtures, and he has no awareness of even of his own wife being in the same place, because this is not his world. And the irony of it is, after they've got all this highfalutin, you know, figuring out how much light should be on where and so forth, they suddenly discover it's too much light, so they think that if you put a red bulb in, it would warm things up.
Yes, yeah.
So they go to the obvious colors, like red or even funny blues.
Ambers.
And you know, they don't know there are nuances of colors.
Perfect lighting, obviously, and always has been and is a candlelight, and that's
right.
Never really been adapted to the restaurant atmosphere.
Well, they're trying to do it now in certain forms of pink and certain forms of soft white, which we call
surprise
pinking. And
of course, the flickering thing nowadays can hypnotize people, and they can't talk at all.
Well,
Dolores, I was going to say, I'd love to see you at candlelight, with candlelight, and I'll bet the technical people on this film of yours, Francis of Assisi, had some lighting headaches themselves, didn't they?
Well, no, really, before we even get on to St. Francis of Assisi, I'm not influenced here by the restaurant business. My father has a restaurant, and
mine, by the way.
I don't mean to discredit the lighting profession, but he says that even more important than lighting, the most important thing in a restaurant is the mirror in the ladies' powder room.
I agree. What happens in your father's ladies' powder room?
Well, they have a wonderful orange mirror, and I go in there, and it's the greatest thing for my
ego
in the world.
No, they tricked it through the orange mirror so the reflection back would look warmer.
Yes. Oh, yes, you come out and you think you look absolutely divine, and you come back and the mood is set and the food is great.
Isn't that, in a sense, isn't that a kind of lighting? Isn't that?
Yes, it is.
It's an exposure of yourself, a reflection of yourself, which isn't reality lighting, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it's the lights in there, but the mirror seems awfully orange to me.
Well, the mirror
has been tricked.
What it does is reflect the light, is reflect a certain color light.
That's right.
Well, let's get from the restaurants, shall we? We got some. Let's get into church, because I know much of the
light that failed. Tell me who lit the light that failed. You should know, Abe.
The light that failed.
I mean, it's a famous phrase, isn't it? The light that failed. Who lit it?
Was a bad electrician, I'll tell you that.
Well, I mean, now churches have stained glass windows,
I was going to talk about those difficulties in filming St. Francis. I know how much of the film was done on location in Italy. Some of it was shot in churches and cathedrals 700 years old. Were the crews able to maneuver well enough in those confined spaces to light it?
Well, we had very interesting experiences because somehow Hollywood and the church, it seems that they're notorious for the conflicts that they have, and the producer...
Hollywood and the church disagree? How shocking.
They have too many churches.
Well, you know, there's a very basic thing here, and it's worth a moment. When the great churches were built back in the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th centuries, stained glass, you know, is only about 1,000 years old. And prior to that, there was open archways with no forms of glass at all. And when they discovered stained glass and the expert manipulation of various rays and tints of them, they're able to create in these apertures, making use of the sun and even daylight to give it either warmth or coolness in different parts of the cathedral. And this gave the stone of the cathedral a warmth and a glow that has never been done by artificial light yet. You go into any cathedral at night, we can't even touch what stained glass did with nature, interior-wise. Stone suddenly takes on a dimension. Now, how to reproduce within your motion picture technique, I'm sure the higher apps is where they put lights to accentuate the feeling of the stained glass was used, you know, in terms of high rays, because most of these churches always had an upper ambulatory, about 100 feet in the air. They could put lights up there, and the camera didn't see any direct light.
Well, I would like to interject and say that I think that the greatest invention in the last 5,000 years has been saran wrap, because they use blue saran wrap over the stained glass windows in Assisi to get the effect that they want.
Stained glass is dramatic, though, like pre-Columbian art or any stone art that lives out of doors because the...
The
sun coming up, and the moving sun makes it dramatic, doesn't it?
Children,
it makes a window dramatic.
Now you got us on churches.
Yes,
now where are we going next?
Well, I was wondering how the local people in those ancient towns feel about the film people coming in and recreating, say, the life of St. Francis. Was there any reaction from the local people
well,
in the small town?
It was very strange because when we first arrived at the hotel in Assisi, there was a little notice pinned on the bulletin board downstairs asking all of the actors please to not smoke and drink in their habits because they were disgracing the town, and all the people were getting very upset, especially the tourists who thought that the actors themselves were the degenerate church in the town. And I gather they had made a film there about 6 months before about the life of St. Clair, and all of the tourists were complaining, and they were even getting letters in Rome that the clergy was disgracing up there, and it was really just a few actors and actresses.
Eating hot dogs in the streets. Or a pizza or something like that.
Well, it was really amazing to me how much... we weren't even known as the actors and the Hollywood personalities, and after having been there for 5 weeks, I answered to the name of Claire, and it was almost amazing to go back to Rome and have people call me by my own name.
Shelley Berman, you've been having a phenomenal season, breaking records everywhere and playing all sorts of enormous halls. Tell me, Shelley, can you perform just about the same in the Purdue University Fieldhouse and the Empire of the Waldorf?
Well, of course. I'm still the same person, and I work with essentially the same material. However, in a theater or an auditorium, there's another kind of thing that happens. You're able to do smaller things. This is peculiar because the slightest gesture is noticed in a 5,000-seat auditorium that may be missed in a 400-seat nightclub, and so they're focused on you. And I'm able to do many pieces of material visually and other types of material which would never go in nightclubs, never.
And you don't seem to miss the intimate room that you seem to have outgrown, the Blue Angel kind of room, I should say.
I don't seem to have outgrown it. I have outgrown. I don't think I've outgrown anything because... The small rooms are important rooms for me to play too, and I like them. However, there is really not too much difference. I've made the adjustment, and I'm able to work in a large room just as well.
Well, the only reason you're working larger rooms is that larger rooms get packed. Nobody could find it profitable enough to keep you in a small place.
That's true. If you have a room that seats only 150 people, you can't pay a performer a large price. And I'm in a very fortunate position now of receiving lots of loot for a week's work.
Shelley, I want to congratulate you, really, because you're one of the few artists who is psychologically prepared to be a financial success. And it's very seldom in this business that it happens.
I'm not psychologically prepared.
Well, you seem to.
I'm sickeningly nouveau riche. I came up here in a rented Cadillac, and I will return home in a rented Cadillac. And I've taken to giving people... in the family, $100 bills, and saying, "Buy yourself a new hat, honey." And I think if I was standing off watching myself, I'd get ill.
No, that's fun. That's the dreams of glory when you're a hungry little kid. Do audiences want you to repeat the things that they've heard on your best-selling record, Shelley?
Well, the people want to hear many of the things that are on my recordings, but I have dropped the airline material, which was the piece of material which did more for me than anything else. I've dropped it because of the recent disasters. I don't think that airline disasters are frequent, certainly. They're very, very rare, but when they do happen, it's terrible. And I just feel now that it isn't necessary for me to do that in order to make laughter. So I don't do the material, although it's the most requested piece I have.
Are the audiences hurt when it turns out that you've changed something on that they've heard you do on one of your records?
Oh, well, they're not hurt because I change them all the time and I get no complaints. However, I'm always terrified if I make a mistake, somebody's going to correct me because they know some of the material very well. But I have a lot of new material now, Mitch, and I don't parrot my record in any way when I perform.
Well, Elsa Lanchester, the material in your show opening here next week, much of it is by well-known authors you've known personally, isn't it?
Yes, it's a mixture of all kinds of writers. Haven't you got a more interesting question?
No, I'll get there.
I'm sorry,
I'll give you a... If you're through with that one, I'll give you another question.
I didn't mean
question.
To get a laugh, I swear. Let me ask you about your oboe playing and let's switch it.
I know you're an oboe player.
Tell us about reeds and things. How'd you get them through that beard?
That's how I got that silken sound, dear.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I'll ask you another question about the credits on your program. It says, censored by Charles Laughton.
Stop it, Shelley. Stop it.
What does censored by Charles Laughton mean? Is it the same as directed by?
Well, it implies there's something to be censored, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, it really also implies something might slip through. And I, having appeared in nightclubs, it really should be sort of clipped down, because when you appear in a theater or in a concert tour, as I've done, naturally, you want people to feel free to come and bring their daughters. I don't know if you have children or not. Do you? You do. Oh, splendid, splendid. Anyway, it makes a bigger audience if you can gather in all generations. If you do songs with double meanings, words that have two meanings, old people think they understand them and get a kick. Young people don't, but think they should get a kick. And so you gather the whole bunch in. This means a very big audience, you know, compared to, frankly, Shirley, nightclub people I don't like, because it's a one-strata society bunch of people, do you know? And I do like concerts, although it's very uncomfortable touring, you know, night after night, as you know well.
I was wondering if you can give us a short trailer, some idea, say, of the subjects that you cover in song and story in your act.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say anything that people should pay for, you know, naturally.
I see.
I can only say that if people come in a little unhappy, there's one thing about it. I have been on tour, you know, to 32 towns, so it's tried and tested. And people always go out happier than when they came in. People have rosy, you know, you can tell in the theater when people go out and their cheeks are sort of rosy and shiny. It means they've been laughing a lot.
I know, as you said, you've taken the show all over the country, just the opposite of those 10 years that you were that you put in as guest star.
Yes, well, it isn't the opposite. The same people came to see me at Turnabout. That's why when I was touring, the same people, when I mentioned Turnabout, they applauded. And I found myself among friends who had come to see me. It's a revisit, you know.
Well, do you enjoy seeing new towns and meeting people far removed from theater and show business talk?
Well, naturally, I like to travel with pay. Who wouldn't? Silly question.
You know, Mitch, you're striking out all the way.
I know. Well, I'll get to Dolores. Beautiful, young, talented. Dolores Hart, you've been as close to going on the road as one can be in movie making, really. You've made one picture in Italy, another with Anna Magnani in Montana, and a third partly in St. Petersburg. That's Florida, that is, not Russia, where the boys are. I was wondering if it's gotten so that you really prefer acting on location instead of the studio.
But it wasn't Montana and it wasn't St. Petersburg, Mitch. I'm
well,
sorry.
Fort Lauderdale.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Wasn't it Montana with Anna Magnani?
No, it was Nevada.
Well, right next door.
Well, that's all right. I won't.
You and Al,
I won't
you
hold
and
100
Lanchester.
Miles against you. You know, this is really amusing because you have the two funniest people, Elsa Lanchester and Shelley Berman, and now I'm supposed to talk about St. Francis and Claire, and it doesn't seem quite kosher,
let's
does
do it?
It?
Fast.
I wonder if you say my name again without forgetting the last name.
I have a hard time remembering my own name when I get in these situations.
Well, Dolores, this new film of yours, Francis of Assisi, sounds like a refreshing departure from the usual film fare in this way. Instead of boy gets girl, it's boy gets religion. And you're the girl, and you'll get religion, too. I read a synopsis, and I was wondering if you could tell a little about the famous woman that you play. St. Clair's her name, is it?
It was quite a departure for me, because it was the first time that I've ever really had an opportunity to play a woman. And it takes on... she starts at the age of 18 and goes to the age of 40. And... it was very strange because everybody told me I looked a lot like my grandmother. They gave me age makeup in the when we made the film, and I forgot the question you asked me.
Well, it's just saying about the famous about the character Saint Clair, or Claire.
Well, Saint Clair, I really like the part because I'm always put into the position of playing a wishy-washy good girl, and there's nothing that irritates me any more than this phrase, because I think there's nothing more contradictory than the phrase wishy-washy in a good girl, because any girl that has had to play backseat bingo on the backseat of a car knows that there is nothing harder than maintaining your convictions when the chips are down. And
Shelley.
This is a new generation, Shelley.
This girl's shocking the pants off.
No, that's not... Oh, well.
Backseat bingo.
Yes. It's a different generation, Shelley.
I mean, how can you hold the cards in your lap?
Dolores, explain to him what backseat bingo is.
Well, he seems to know more than I do. He's the one that brought it up.
I know a little bit more than you do, I'm sure. And you know, as far as backseats of cars, but bingo? No, nothing.
Well, now, I use this line from a movie I did once, so it's really not my line, so if you want to say anything about it, you have to talk to the author who wrote it.
Dolores, this sounds quite a departure from the first parts you played in the films. Are you talking about that early leading lady part of yours with Elvis Presley? Is that where you use the line?
No, in fact, that was I played a better girl. And I'm always playing the good girl. I was even a much better girl in that picture than... I feel now that I've become the saint and been canonized, there's only one way, and that's down.
And that's sweet, too. Hey, Fader, let's shed some light on a somewhat different subject. I'd like to know what inspired you as a boy to pursue an art form that hadn't even really been invented, and that is lighting director for the theater.
A man named was Thurston.
A magician?
Yes. When I was a kid, I was taken to the theater for the first time, and it was the old Davidson Theater in Milwaukee. And I was sitting up in the second balcony, which was the least expensive seats, and as the curtain went up, and I saw this man make people appear and disappear in space, that didn't hit me so much as when he sat on the black box and faces appeared as if they were ectoplasm. And when the final scene where he shot the gun, you know, and down came the box and landed on the stage, and he took out one box and put it somewhere else, took another box out, and finally the last box, which looked almost too small for a human being to come out of, he opened it up and out came the performer. Well, don't ask me how, but I got backstage. And when I saw the maze of all the tricks and whatnot, and I looked around the black box and I saw no figures coming out of it, I managed to get backstage again during a matinee, because my father had a restaurant and had a reason to bring sandwiches back or something like that. And I saw this, that what was light was doing, and this whole idea of the miasma and the mysterious and all that, and I was stuck ever since.
Well, Elsa Lanchester, I've done some boning up on your past, too.
Jump across the table.
And you must have had your sights set on the theater even earlier than Abe Fader. You were a dancing whiz even before you were in your teens, right?
No, I had to earn my living, and I was a talented child, and so I studied dancing, and I taught dancing in the show that I do, you know, this...
But you were only 12 years old when that happened, wasn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, but all the same, when there are no rules, you know, about education much, you live in London a long time ago, you don't have to do anything. I was an assistant dancing teacher when I was 14. Anyway, in this show I describe it, because I got sent to Isadora Duncan's school in Paris, you see.
That must have been an experience.
That was. Yeah. Well, anyway, this is part of my show. That's I do a whole section about
backseat bingo
throwing
there,
a ball and catching it, you know, and going up with the music and down with the music. And this is a whole segment of what I do. Not that the show is in any way autobiographical, but as I say, people, when they go out, they know me, I think.
And then go ahead, I'm sorry.
No. I mean, who knows anybody? That's all I was going to say.
I was saying, and then in your teens, you were running a kind of nightclub called the Cave of Harmony, and people like H.G. Wells, Aldous Huxley were coming around.
Yes.
What were the attractions, then, for Abe Fader's benefit? How was the lighting?
Oh, well,
tell her.
It was a fire trap. That's how the lighting was. Any really sort of good lighting that doesn't cost any money is a
That's
fire
right.
trap, isn't it?
Yes.
That's true.
Very much
and
so.
This was. We had candlelight, frankly, and wasn't a fire, and it's all gone, so I don't even have to touch wood.
How did you get turned from the dance to acting, Elsa Lanchester?
Oh, well, I was appearing there, filling in, and dancing and singing and doing songs like, I think the first song I ever did was called The Cock of the North, where I wore a paper skirt and people kind of tore it off because, you know, I was so close to them. And then managers and people, gave me jobs. My first offer was to do part of a bug in the thing called the insect play, which I think was on in New York years ago,
too. Carl Capek.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Carl Capek. Great play, isn't
it? Yes, it was.
It's one of the 300 you lit, I'll bet.
Could be.
I did a production of it.
You did?
Yes.
Well, I played the larva, the bug, you know?
Know
the thing that came out of the earth
yes,
and kind
it.
Of ate all the capitalism.
Yes.
All the capitalism.
That's right. You know, I know this may be extraneous, but I think it's hilarious.
It really
is. R.U.R., the production that he wrote, Capek, about mechanical men being IBM machines, you know.
Way ahead of its time.
1922,
right?
When the world was just completely run over by these kind of animals. No souls, you know, and they couldn't reproduce themselves. Now, he did this in 1918. We're about to get into it.
Yes. Elsa, I want to ask you another question. I don't know. Did you and your husband, Charles Lawton, first meet professionally or socially?
Professionally, yes. He was in the play by Arnold Bennett. He played Mr. Prohack. I was his secretary, and that's how... We never talk about our marriage. That's why it's lasted, frankly.
Tell me, with the two of you hurtling back and forth across the globe, acting... I think he's just returned from England only recently. Who's taking care of those 6 zillion cats of yours back home in California?
We have 2 cats, but publicity and the likes of you, you and your kind, build them up. Build them up into hundreds. If I was told I had 5,000 cats, Shelley has 26,000
dogs.
Poodles.
Well, I was wondering if Shelley found this talk of cats regrettable.
No.
You have, you're quite a dog fancier, aren't you, Shelley Berman?
Yes, I have, yes, I like fancy dogs. I have 2 poodles, one of which is at school. I sent her to a school. And
why?
She's doing well, she wrote me. And,
very well.
Yes. She's learning. Why did I send her?
Yeah.
This is a family show, isn't it? Anyway, you know, I got sick and tired of, you know...
calling cards all over the place.
Calling cards everywhere. Like, you were out and didn't take me down, and this is it, kid. And so we sent her to a school called Canine College.
Oh, no, really?
You know what's peculiar?
This is a new piece for you to develop.
This is very interesting.
Sure.
I remember when I wanted to go to acting school. This is true, Mitch. I wanted very much to go to acting school. It cost $100 for a 3-month term. And my family bled to give me that money. I remember my folks just squeezing it out of their souls to give me that loot to go to school. And I've just paid $300 to housebreak my dog.
Now it's his specks in milk.
Yeah. And it's somehow terribly ironic, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my sad duty to announce that our allotted time is about up. We're being pushed out. I want to thank you all for this visit. Elsa Lanchester, the best of luck on your New York opening next week of Elsa Lanchester Herself. From all reports, a delightful evening in the theater. Thanks for coming, Elsa. And Shelley Berman, off you go to the Waldorf, where you continue to captivate visitors to the Empire Room. And of course, your records go on and on. Dolores Hart, I'll be watching for Francis of Assisi, your film for 20th Century Fox. And meanwhile, you're on view at Radio City and Where the Boys Are. And Abe Fader, thank you for dropping down to spread some light. Your art is on view indoors at Camelot and outdoors almost anywhere around New York and down in Florida. To my listeners, I'll be back next week at this same time with some new guests I think you'll want to meet. I think we're going to have the other side of the Elsa Lanchester story from Charles Lawton. So plan to join us.
Uh-oh.
Until then, this is Mitch Miller from Sides East in New York saying good night and have a good week.